Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Rob McCarron.
Hashtag authority. Hashtag Steph Bouncy. Hashtag SmackDown 15.
Jeff Hawkins.
You done digging that hole?
You're listening to Shake Them Ropes with Rob McCarron and Jeff Hawkins.
Dance on your grave, dirt sheet writer.
Shake Them Ropes, I am Jeff Hawkins. Rob McCarron has decided to go traveling the next 2 weeks. So I'll be having some fill-ins. Joining me today, old friend of the show, old friend of mine. Just old. Mm-hmm. Although you're younger than I am. I shaved so that I don't have to show the gray. Filmmaker, comedian, bon vivant, Brian O'Connell.
Yes.
What is it about women in traveling? I don't understand it, but Rob's wife really likes to travel, so he goes with her. I think Rob also likes to travel, but I think she likes to do it more.
As does my gal. My gal has been to all 7 continents. She's trying to get to 50 countries by the time she's 50. I think she's got only like 7 or 8 more to go. Biggest problem is that, you know, I love that, like, Rob's traveling. It's like, well, so am I. I'm on tour right now.
Yeah.
At Stop in South Carolina, but I was like, any excuse to come and talk to my good friend Hawk for an hour and change and just, you know, shoot the breeze. Happy to be back.
Yeah, COVID killed improv in LA for the most part, so you're a road warrior.
Yeah.
Give me some Bojangles and some cheer wine, please.
I've been on the road for a little over a month, and I'm proud to say that today, literally right before we recorded, was only the third time I've had Bojangles.
Oh.
Unfortunately, in South Carolina, because these heathens don't know how to live, Cheerwine is not at Bojangles.
What?
In South Carolina. Yeah. I always forget, and I ask for a number. It's my standard order, number one, seasoned fries, Connie mustard, but Cheerwine. And they're like, we don't have Cheerwine. I was like, tea, I guess.
Well, let's get the plug up front, uh-huh. Because I drop this a lot because I don't think people necessarily understand the comedy improv intertwining in Los Angeles and how heavy it is. And even now, like, mm-hmm. like seeing like Shane Haste being involved with you guys.
Mighty don't kneel, baby.
Oh, you
Mighty don't kneel.
You say Slapjack. You always refer to him as Slapjack.
No, that's your old that's your old partner's gimmick. I'd never infringe on that. Okay. I'd never infringe on the gimmick. Yeah.
But tell us about Shane Hartline's deal, because Shane is good people.
Yeah, so I am part of a comedy collective, semi-serious wrestling promotion called Nearly Average Wrestling, aka NAW, or NAW. We have, for the last year, we've been doing monthly shows of NAW or Never. I liken it to, it's The Voice meets Pee-wee's Playhouse, but make it wrestling. So we have bucket pulls. People can get 60 seconds to get on the mic and cut a promo and win a Nearly Average Wrestling contract. We do not pay in money. We only pay in clout. And stats, you know, status. And then so next month in May, we're going to be part of the Netflix as a joke, and it's also going to be our 1 year anniversary. So we'll be at the three clubs either May 6th or May 7th. Can't remember what it is. You can follow us on all the socials. You can find it very easily, and we're very excited about it. Shane Haste is part of it. Shane Hartline is, he came up with it. But we got all the classics. We got Leroy Patterson. You remember him from Fighting 10 and -1 back in the old days of AEW Dark. You know, we got all kinds of guys. Martin Morrow, you know, Peter Murphy, Kyle Heff is our, you know, vibes vendor. Peter Avalon, pretty Peter.
Peter Avalon.
Yeah. And we have panels of guests. I've been really, the funny enough is that I had to miss this last one in March because I was on tour. And of course, our guests were John Morrison, the guy I'm tightest with in wrestling.
Yeah.
And the Peacock himself, Dalton Castle, one of my favorites, so I've wanted to meet. But we've had Effie, we've had We've had all kinds of great people come on and do stuff. Coachman, lots of comedians.
Coachman was there. I know.
Coachman has done it multiple times. He was real good to me. He's a big old teddy bear behind the scenes, so it's nice. On mic, everybody's in character, right? Backstage, yeah. Everyone's like, "Hey, brother, that was fucking fantastic!" Right?
Yeah. You pay me when the lights come on. You don't pay me when the lights come off, so I can be normal and stuff like that. So
yeah,
let's get to it.
Yes.
In the news, not a lot of news to be honest with you right now that
yes
I talk about, but Janelle Grant filing a declaration. This thing's 40 pages. I read it.
Ooh, you're the law guy. Explain to me what a declaration means in this context. Well,
it's interesting because I just wrote a declaration yesterday for my piece of thing, and it's really nothing. I'm going to tell you all this.
Okay.
A declaration is I'm writing this stuff down.
Mm-hmm.
I am telling you this under penalty of perjury. And ooh. I'm signing and dating it. It's basically a statement of fact that can then be entered into evidence. And God willing, why she would put 40 pages worth of quote unquote facts under penalty of perjury, where you could just look at that and go, "Well, that date's wrong,"
and then unwind the whole thread. Right
yeah,
there,
but you, yeah. But usually you couch it with on or around. You know, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot like a regular filing, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
In terms of a statement of facts, it's everything you'd think it would be, and it's just as gross as you would think it would be.
Of course, I feel like it's in for the general public for us because, as you know, I'm also very involved with a lawyer. So I would never want to say that like I knew anything just because, you know, through osmosis of living with her. But I will say that, you know, just that sort of general, for the general public, that just feels like she went, bet. You know, it's the legal version of like, bet, right? I'm putting it all down under threat of perjury. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
It doesn't have you don't need like a witness or anything to sign it. Mm-hmm. It's just you making this thing. Usually an attorney will help you craft it. So that you don't get in trouble. I didn't need to. I was memorializing a conversation with a nurse that I remembered. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to get that down. But
sure, I'm going to turn 50 this year, Jeff, and I really hope that we reach the end of this Janelle Grant legal cycle. And hopefully, it works out well for her. To be certain, I want to make that very clear. But also, I hope it's done before the time I turn 90, because I just feel like it just.
Your Honor, we'd like a continuance, and it just keeps going and going and going. Yeah. No,
Space Courts. It's gonna be on Mars next.
Look, I am not a lawyer either, but I worked in law for 21 years.
Yes, long-time listeners know.
Yeah, I'm gonna give the same thing I gave previously. I think this statement indicates to me that they think they're gonna lose on the in court. And that they want the facts out there. They want everybody to go, look at this. Look at this. What's happened here? It's horrible. Mm-hmm. It's horrible. It's horrible. And that hopefully the damage there will be enough to hurt someone financially. But
it's a toughie.
They filed in court, and of course you have people like Thurston and Bix who are avid Pacer watchers, for filings and stuff. So I don't think she put it out into the ether for it to be deconstructed. She just filed it in court and then the rest of us did.
Yeah.
But
that's not, there's no Freedom of Information Act for someone doing this. It's like, no, it's already out there, buddy. Like there's no deep dive to be done here.
And I don't think it's an accident that it's out there either. It's mutually beneficial for everyone involved, kind of a thing.
Someone smarter than me once said, when the law's on your side, you bang the law. When the facts are on your side, you bang the facts. And when neither one of those are on your side, you bang the table.
You bang the table, right. And all these words coming back to haunt me, because I think I used this on here, but it's also one of those things where, and I've said this as well, if you're the attorney and you're the one in the press and nothing's happening in court, you're the one losing. that's the other thing. And
So, but, knock on wood, knock on wood. Hopefully that all goes well for her, but it is what it is.
to your interests now. This is Brian's wheelhouse. Brian grew up in North Carolina. I grew up in Virginia. We are Crockett people through and through.
Through and through.
WWE Hall of Famer Jimmy Valiant, known worldwide as the Boogie Woogie Man, has announced that he will lace up his boots one final time on April 25th, 2026 in Lancaster, South Carolina. For a special event titled Boogie's Last Dance, presented by almost close to your organization, NAWA Championship Wrestling.
Okay. NAWA, is that North American Wrestling Association?
I believe it is.
Ooh, that's real close to NWA. I thought we would get popped, but NAWA. All right.
Now, I'll say my piece, and I'll let you go through it. Boogie, for me, watching him in Crockett was like, okay, he's annoying. He does all the heel stuff. He's comedy, but he wants to be thought of as street. But he also has that era of toughness about him, because you'd always see him bleeding. You'd always see him in fights.
Mm-hmm. Dog collars. Love dog collar matches. Yes. Couldn't get enough dog collar matches.
Yes, but he was but his opposite number up until the Horseman form, when Tully said, hey, you're a friend of Dusty and I'm going after you, was Paul Jones. And Paul Jones Army. The Island of Misfit Toys. That was Paul Jones, C-level, any foreign heel coming into the territory, Abdul the Butcher, Baron Von Raschke, the Barbarian. Oddly enough, early in 84, 85, when Tully came in, Tully and Dick Slater were both in Paul Jones' Army
for about
3 weeks.
I can see Dick Slater for sure, you know, but Tully seems to be a little bit more erudite than the usual Paul Jones Army.
But for me, the wake-up call was when I became older and I got access to stuff like Memphis. And you see handsome Jimmy Valiant. And you go, who is this guy? And he is not a geek. on there. Like, look, you get for every Miss Atlanta Lively angle that you had, which was Ron Garvin in drag.
Love
it. And Boogie against the original Midnight Express, and we'll go into Dennis Condrey after this. Mm-hmm. You know, you watch handsome Jimmy Valiant, and he was, I won't say he was a Billy Graham ripoff, because that would be doing disrespect to both him and Billy Graham in many ways.
Yes.
Paul Ellering in Georgia was more of, Paul Ellering was literally doing an amalgam of the Grand Wizard and superstar Billy Graham at the same time, if you ever watch him as a wrestler or whatever. But Boogie in Memphis, I mean, he was vicious. He was evil. He was going after Jimmy Hart. He was awesome. And you're just like, it's a weird tale of two cities. If all you've ever seen is, again, this is where dubbing does you wrong, is like Manhattan transfers the boy from New York City. And he was nowhere near from New York City.
No. It's all heat. It's all carpetbagger heat. Yeah, handsome Jimmy Valiant was, you know, a heel. I mean, at this point, you mentioned superstar Billy Graham. At a certain point, like, everybody was ripping off superstar Billy Graham. The most famously, Hulk Hogan. You know, you see where they got a little bit of Dusty in there as well, like all the Rap Daddy and all that kind of like talk. But like, I try to explain to people of like, you have to remember like how over Boogie was, is that he pretended to be New York from New York, so you could get carpetbagger heat in the South. And then when he turned face, he still used the same music, the bar from New York City. You know how over you have to be as a baby face in Crockett country as a guy from, you know, New York City? Get a rope. The old Pace Picante commercials. Boogie just figured out that, you know, I'll blade a little bit and, you know, it'll run. But his later year stuff, where he was more of, you know, comedy act going up against Paul Jones' Army, a long storytelling, you know, long-term booking that everyone, you know, craves nowadays or talks about incessantly, is like, yeah, the next big heel monster that comes in. And he just, you know, Jimmy Valiant just figured out, like, I don't have to take that many bumps if it's all plunder and blading, brother. I'll do it. Well, I'll extend my career another 15 years or to when I'm 85 and doing my last match.
His squash matches are poke the eyes, rake the back, body slam, elbow. It's all one, heel two, stuff. Three. Yes,
it's all heel stuff. Which is, again, that, if you go back and watch early days of Hulk Hogan when he was making the turn from heel into babyface, he still wrestled the big rack, the raking across the back and all that stuff. Like, yeah, Hogan was still doing heel stuff. I love it.
My favorite thing, or one of my favorite hobbies, is going on wrestling discords and going to the old wrestling things. Mm. The first time they see Jimmy Valiant and Crockett, and the 20-something mind cannot comprehend this at all. Because they go, okay, he's sexually assaulting audience members.
Yes.
Street people is definitely not politically correct. He and
very
his street people.
Big very problematic.
Big mama is problematic. Mm-hmm. He's basically saying he's a pimp.
Yeah.
And then people watch the Pez Watley turn and they go, Pez is the good guy here.
Yeah.
He's the best black athlete, and Pez just nails him.
It's two of my favorite things. Is number one, if anyone watching or listening wants to have a good time, go and look up that old Crockett pre-tape where Boogie's down on himself and he is out. They shot it outside on location where he's walking through the straight up ghetto to get all the street people to help him out. And they're all two in band saying like, yeah, I'll be there for you. I'll be at the match. I'll be there in the audience rooting you on, all that. It is very clearly him saying, I'm a pimp and here are all my crime friends.
I think a limousine comes and picks him up after the promo. It's the icing on the cake on that thing.
Oh, also a limousine picked me up. I'm also full of shit, but I'm the baby face. and the Pez Watley turn, I wrote about that when Uproxx was a thing and they didn't, you know, venture capitalism to destroy all of it. I just found out all my stuff got yanked down along with everybody else's. I used to have a series called Mid-Card Babyfaces, and I wrote about Pez Watley leading up to that famous turn and going back and looking at all that stuff again with like an older adult's eyes. Same thing like you just said. I was just like, Watley's in the right here, man. This guy, you know, like I can't remember what it was in Memphis where it's like someone tried to sell, was it Buddy Rogers or Buddy Rose tried to sell another human being for a gold watch.
I know this one because I just watched a lot of it. It was Buddy Landell and there Butch, it is, Reed, and Butch Reed in Mid-South, and Skandar Akbar wanted Buddy Landell to be part of the army. He goes, I'll bring Butch with me, and he sold them for a watch.
Yes.
But then
Butch Reed, just like Junkyard Dog before him, suddenly is the baby face, is just white hot, where everyone in the southern audience is going, that's wrong. It's like, yeah, we're 20 years away from the Civil
Butch
Rights Act.
Well, no, Butch Reed was supposed to be the baby face there, at least. I mean, here it's
and
in order to get him over, they cut off Boogie Woogie's ponytail, and he's doing promos in his what would later be his Jive Tones outfit.
Yeah,
with the bow tie and the silver jacket, and he's holding this thing like he found like a dead rat somewhere, and he had to travel with this thing in his bag. That's the thing that.
It's no faking the funk, man. You just can't go to a new city and hope you're going to find a rat there. You got to take it with you. You got to freeze that boy.
Yeah, before Sting, everybody turned on Jimmy Valiant. Manny Fernandez turning on him.
Classic.
And that was the best part of his career. That was due to the Ron Garvin turn, right?
Because
Ron Garvin had turned and joined Gary Hart. And Paul Jones was offering him money and was like, oh, I'm not taking your money. And then eventually he takes the money.
Yeah. We can get into it. I'm going to get into it a little bit later. But it is a thing where it's like Paul Jones' army is kind of what I wish they would do more of with, I'm blanking, the family at AEW.
The
Don Callis family. I wish they would do more Paul Jones army stuff. And it looks like I may have a chance because now it looks like they're going into like him and Orange Cassidy. I'm like, yes, put Orange Cassidy in the Boogie Woogie Man role and put Don Callis into the Paul Jones role and just keep throwing guys at Orange Cassidy, and just Don Callis getting more and more frustrated that he just can't put this effing clown away. Just let them do it for 2 years straight. I'll be the happiest man on the planet.
The only problem with that is that the guys in his in the Don Callis family, I mean, it would have to be the B team only. Because the A team, he has a lot of marquee guys. He has like a Horseman and a Paul Jones army all in the same family.
Yes, because there's 19 of them. That's my thing of like, Orange Cassidy has to slowly lose all the rest of the guys in the conglomerate. And that's very easy to break up the conglomerate because who gives a shit about the conglomerate? but also, like, I think it's the same thing. Like, how much longer is Andrade going to be in the Don Callis family? And can we even guarantee that Andrade won't be in WWE next week, right?
Yeah.
Nothing against him. I love El Idolo, but you haven't told me that you keep your bags unpacked for very long. So Lance Archer just can't imagine why this dumb guy with the sunglasses just won't stay down. Do that for 3 months. Money. Yeah.
Well, they never do anything for more than 3 weeks in between, like, paper.
That's why I said we'll get to it later.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Before we get to the modern wrestling, let's circle back, because I kind of got rushed through last week in the middle about Dennis Condrey.
Yeah.
And you and I know Dennis Condrey well.
Very well.
You know, it's one of those things where it's like, I always described him as, because he is the epitome of the hillbilly in community theater doing wrestling. Mm-hmm. You know, he has the bandanas on the legs and around the neck. It's an ironic nickname, the lover boy Dennis kind of thing to me. Mm-hmm. But I love the original Midnight Express, the original Jim Cornette Midnight Express, I guess I would call it. Because you still have Randy Rose, you have Norvell Austin in there from back in the day. But this version that ended up in Georgia and then ended up in Crockett is my favorite. But I'll tell you this, if you want to seek out some fun, because Condrey and Eaton went from Mid-South to World Class to Crockett, there's a four-way between Condrey and Eaton, Mondo and Chavo, the Fantastics, and the PYTs, who are Norvell Austin, who used to be in the and Coco Beware. It's a pretty fun little match to watch.
Send me that link.
It's not a 5-star in current days classic, but it's a 5-star in 1984-85 kind of deal. So
wall-to-wall screaming, bell-to-bell screaming from the audience. They're all in.
Your jam is, and I've mentioned this on the show and we've talked about it, is the Garvin reuniting angle, which is a very underrated and somebody should do this again someday.
Yes.
They've kind of tried it with the Hardys and it didn't exactly work, I don't think. But give me your love for Dennis Condrey and all things.
Yeah, lover boy Dennis Condrey. Also, I like the idea because, you know, tag team wrestling, especially pro wrestling in the territory early to mid 80s, especially tag team pro wrestling in the early to mid 80s, there was a lot of guys who outside of that context would not be considered attractive, but were considered sex symbols. So I never took Loverboy and Bobby Eaton as like it being ironic. Like a wink, ironic. Right.
No.
It was just like, these guys are the sexiest guys. These are the guys that women go crazy for at the honky tonk and the line dancing. On every Friday and Saturday night,
their toughness makes them attractive to the ladies in the dive bars around Alabama, Georgia, and Mississippi. So,
well, you mentioned Alabama. That's the first thing I think is like Alabama, Oak Ridge Boys, and all that. Like those are the guys that just beating them off with a stick, right? The Garvins reunite is 100% my favorite angle of all time. I feel like there is something to be done with that angle today. I would pitch it as for something I would do with Mark Quinn and Isaiah Cassidy.
Explain it.
The Hardys.
Explain.
Yeah, I'm going to. So Ronnie, the Hands of Stone Garvin is, you know, a top mid card with a one world title run as thanks for all the, you know, here's your gold watch. Thank you for all your help.
I think he's a member of the United States Tag Champs at this point with Barry Windham as well.
Yes. And so, yes, good memory. So he is just your standard tough guy, white meat, baby face. Love him to death. And then he has a kayfabe brother who is actually his, I believe, son-in-law in real life.
Stepson.
Stepson. There you go. Gorgeous Jimmy Garvin that he brought into the business. And Gorgeous is a heel. He's got baby, you know, he's got Precious with him, his valet. He's got the feather boas. He comes out the sharp dressed man by ZZ Top, the hairspray and all that. And so, yeah, they're in a tag team match with the Midnight Express. Jim Cornette, as he is wont to do, gets in, hits Ronnie Garvin with a fireball. And back then, boys and girls, professional wrestlers had friends, kayfabe friends. And when something happened to the babyface, the whole locker room, the whole good guy locker room would come out. And so they all ran out, looked at him and all that. It was chaos. And then, you know, the right commentator always makes it work. That's Jimmy Garvin. What is he doing out here? And yeah. Jimmy, and what I like to call not only the greatest fluid master shot in the history of pro wrestling, arguably one of the greatest fluid masters in all of cinema, this guy who no one knows is on camera, follows him from inside the ring as Ronnie's got a towel over his face.
Yeah,
and they're leading him back, and Jimmy's got one shoulder, and they follow him out through the arena, through people. So he's having to, like, the lights are changing on that. They go into the locker room, the good guys' locker room. They're doing that. Jimmy looks once, twice. Am I going to do it? I'm going to do it. Runs across. This cameraman has to follow him across into the bad guys' heels' locker room. He kicks in the door. He starts whipping the shit out of Jimmy Cornette. All the heels are pulling Jimmy Garvin off because they're like, as far as they know, he's still a bad guy. He's still one of them. And all that. They pull him out again. They put Ronnie into the. They go outside the venue at night. It's raining, and they put him in the back of a. They put him in the back of a 4-door Volvo to take him to the hospital and all that. And it's like, and that was the turn. And it was just them. That was the start of the angle of the Garvin brothers reunite. There's a great promo where he's like, you know, Jimmy Garvin's like, I'm worried about my brother. He may never see again. He may lose an eye. You know. I'm just thinking about, you know, Gorgeous Jay, what you got yourself into here? I've always been the bad guy. I've always been the one that, like, cut corners. Ronnie had his kind of wrestling, and I had my kind of wrestling. And I should be the one in the hospital. I'm the one that karmically should be doing that. And it's my favorite because Dennis then cuts his own promo in the next week in studio, and he is screaming at David Crockett, one of the promoters. It's one of my favorite heel promos of all time because he goes, We didn't know that Jim Cornette, our manager, was going to throw the fireball. Why should we be punished? It's just zero accountability. That's my best friend. That's the guy that managed me and makes sure I get paid a lot of money. But I didn't do it. He did it. It's wonderful. And then it's, of course, Dennis Condrey being Dennis Condrey. You can't tell that story without also pointing out that Condrey was also the guy that didn't suffer any fools and would be the first person to say, y'all can go F yourself. I'm out of here. So when they finally get to the match and the blow off of that whole angle, Stan Lane is now in the Midnight Express.
Yeah.
Dennis is not even there for the match.
No,
it's Condrey, perfect.
Condrey cut out right before the Crockett Cup.
Yeah,
because he thought that they should win, or he had a problem jobbing to somebody in the tournament.
I think it was like too early. It was a combination of those guys aren't better than us, and we're the Midnight Express. We should be losing at least in the semifinals, if not the finals.
Yeah, so at that point, Cornette had the choice between Tom Pritchard or Stan Lane, because I think Steve Kern had wanted to go back to Florida for a while.
He
was in there. And so they picked Stan Lane, although I always wondered what would have happened with Tom Pritchard. And
well, eventually, he got them with the Heavenly Bodies.
Well, no, that was work together. That was true in the six-man. But also, Condrey cuts out at the height of the angle where he was brought back to Crockett. Yes. / WCW. It's loser leaves town. It's the second hottest angle in this company, original Midnight Express and Midnight Express.
Yeah.
And Condrey just goes, I hate Jim Herd. I'm out of here. Then Jack Victory's in the match for some reason. It's like, huh.
And I mean, both times. Wasn't wrong.
But the guy I always feel for is Randy Rose, because Randy Rose is like, look, man, this is the best I have for my career right now, and you're blowing it, dude.
Forever.
And then shortly thereafter, was in enhancement matches. Meanwhile, Condry goes off to like, he does like 2 weeks in Portland as a baby face and they're booing him. Mm-hmm. He goes, no, I'm a baby face here, guys. In the promo, he says, I'm a good guy here. It's just Dennis hilarious.
As Cornette has said a million times over, the Midnight Express, including Dennis Condry, are only baby faces in Baltimore and Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Midnight versus rock and roll in Baltimore. Midnight is the one getting cheered.
Yeah, and of course, you know, the opening of Clash 1 between the Midnights and the Fantastics is one of my, you got to watch that match. That thing is awesome. That thing is a fight from the beginning. You're just like, oh my God. If you've never seen hardcore wrestling, you'd be like, oh my God.
Yeah.
This thing is insane. Unfortunately, all the desensitization. Now you can see a beginning like that every week on AEW, and it's just like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, the clubbing back and forth where that one with the Midnight Express and Fantastics, it looks like that one pride fight from the early 90s where the who's the American guy with the mustache?
Fry.
The
Don Fry and I forgot the other guy's name.
Yamamoto, yeah. I can't remember his name. I can't remember his name, where they just pounded each other with haymakers for the first 3 minutes. Yeah, show a newer wrestling fan or a younger wrestling fan that Midnight Express Fantastics match that you just mentioned, and people will be like, are they fighting for real? Do they hate each other? Did they go off script? It's like, nah, man, this is just what working used to look like. Those are soft as butter punches, man.
I said this last week as well, but there's an enhancement match from Mid-South, I think. Mm-hmm. It's either Memphis or Mid-South.
Where
Stan Lane and Dennis Condry are tagging together. And that's always an interesting what if to me. I mean, you know, it's a nothing match. I mean,
I didn't know about that.
But it's just one of those happenstance things. It's like you turn on 83 Mid-South and you see Tim Horner beating both Martin Lundy, a.k.a. Arn Anderson, and then Tully Blanchard back-to-back episodes. And you're like, what the? How's Tim Horner had the same gimmick for 30 years? But let's get into the modern wrestling.
Yeah.
And they have decided for WrestleMania. Boy, this felt like an AEW show in so many ways in terms of, hey, our pay-per-view's in 2 weeks. Let's get all the matches booked right now. But they have decided that the cure for interest in the Cody Rhodes-Randy Orton storyline is Stephanie McMahon. Okay. Now, in her defense, let me explain, because I may have to backtrack on this.
No.
This might just be because they were in Madison Square Garden, and the McMahons in Madison Square Garden, like they said, we just want one. It's tradition, blah, 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 blah.
She's her own person. It's very complicated for right now. We go through that in our own lives in the entertainment business, where people at Comic-Con get asked, you know, there was just about to be a Buffy the Vampire Slayer reboot, and so all those people had to answer questions about, you know, Joss Whedon again. I never want to get on Stephanie about that, but it is still... You can't do it without making me think of it. And you certainly can't say lines in a promo, you'll never be your father. Well, I sure as shit hope not, man. Is that supposed to be an insult?
That was
you'll never eat as many people as Jeffrey Dahmer. Thank you, I guess.
You know, you'll never kill as many people as Jonestown did. What is your problem? Why are you such a failure?
You don't know that. Just today, DNA said that Ted Bundy killed another woman close to cold case in Utah. You don't know how many people I can eat and kill, brother. You wait for it in this weird at WrestleMania. Like, what are we doing?
What are we doing?
Is that supposed to be a heel promo? And why, like, leave the poor woman alone? I want to get under a sheet and be like, leave Stephanie alone.
Okay, but that said, we're writers. My cup of coffee
the standard WWE, like we always say, the WWE fans, you've said it a billion times, WWE fans are there to sing the songs and watch the entrances and all that. Do you think they're enjoying this? Do you think they're enjoying a Stephanie McMahon? Post the music pop and her coming out and just saying hello and waving like Queen Elizabeth. You know, I'm an Irishman. I'm not going to say God rest your soul to Queen Elizabeth. But you're like, do you think they're enjoying this, the regular WWE fan?
I'm 3/4 British. I'll say God rest her soul.
There you go for it.
The other quarter's Irish.
Yeah.
I Yes.
Okay, but you had to think about it. You had to pause.
I did, but I also realized, God, I'd say, what, 60% of the people there aren't following anything having to do with Vince McMahon.
Anyway, okay, that's fair. That's fair. They're not dialed in. They don't read the sheets.
They don't want spoilers. They just, hey, I like wrestling. I'm taking my kid there. It's, you know, the kids aren't dialed into the intricacies of sexual predation of Vince McMahon necessarily. Say,
you don't think a 9-year-old kid is waving a 40-page declaration in his hand and be like, how dare you get out of the ring?
They just want to do the EO Sky thing in the audience. They're not going, oh, did Brock Lesnar sex traffic? No, they're not. I hope
Obi kicks him to the moon. I hope he should never lose and he should never get hit.
That's the thing. That's what
100%. I hope those four astronauts are still at the moon so they can watch Brock come around while they're up there. Go for it, Obi.
But go back to the question. We both dabbled in the entertainment industry. You've actually stayed there. I won't say you dabbled. I dabbled. I consider it dabbling, even though it was like, what, 6 years? I think it was.
I think you're more than dabbled. But anywho, like, what are we doing?
We're writers, and so we watch television shows like writers.
Well, it's a television show. It's on television. They write a script. Yes. They famously tell us that everything is very, very scripted. There is no improv. People aren't allowed to go off.
Okay.
Then if you're writing a television show, then you belong to the genre of television. That means you have to follow their rules. What are you doing?
Yes.
Why are we doing this?
Now, let me get to the question.
Please.
You introduce Stephanie into this angle. Mm-hmm. She's part of the angle, right? She's the one on the phone, or she knows whoever's on the phone with Randy Orton.
Look,
that is
my thinking. It has to be for two reasons. Number one, you brought it up. Otherwise, it's going to end up like Family Matters, and suddenly you're just expecting us 2 weeks from now to think that there's not another daughter that you just retconned out of there. The Fresh Prince has a new mom, and we're all just supposed to go along with it.
Here's our new cousin Oliver. we're bringing into the family.
Or number two, if you're bringing her in, you're not going to pay it off, then you are giving away the game that you don't know what you're doing. You don't know what story you're trying to tell 2 weeks before you're the granddaddy of the ball. What do you want from me?
Yeah, it feels like a kind of cynical put Stephanie on because McMahon's mean ratings. But at the same time, I go, you can't just do the AEW thing and go, oh, it's long-term storytelling. We just had this person appear, and we're never going to mention her for 6 months.
It can't be. I mean, first of all, she's not taking a bump, even though she's willing to. She has before in the past. She's not taking an RKO. She's not taking a crossroads.
Oh, right? No, but here's the follow-up question.
Oh, no. Is Steve Austin coming out? No. I think they're worried about their numbers. And yes, I think they went cheap heat, brought her house, hoping to get a pop. And someone back there, probably from TKO, because they don't know the business either, is probably going to tell everybody, yeah, we'll bring Stephanie out there and that'll goose sales for Vegas. People will buy tickets, think they're going to see Stephanie in Vegas. Okay.
Now, I'm still, possibly they can make this TKO and do The Rock is coming. And have him show up Friday because the person on the phone is showing up Friday. But
I don't trust him to show up as much as I trust Dennis Condrey to keep his bags unpacked. Shut up.
Here's my 1B. Is this possibly because we know that Roman Punk is going to be an overbooked mess, I think, with a
cast of thousands.
It doesn't
have to be. Yeah, you guys were talking about this. You and Rob were talking about this last week. And I'm like, I don't think it has to be, though.
It doesn't. But one of them has to be. And so if we've decided that Cody Orton is the overbooked one, we're getting Brandy involved, aren't we? Because the kid is now old enough to know what's going on. That is my thing here. And she's been chirping a bit in terms of
I hadn't even considered that. Like, yeah, if Stephanie comes out, she's not taking that because, of course, it's going to be Brandy doing the slap on the ring apron.
Bitch, who told you it was open?
It was open
mic
night. Yeah,
and that line
only comes up if she's on Raw next week.
And getting a punt, yeah. Possibly. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing: I wouldn't bring her out because I guarantee you bring Brandy. I like Brandy a lot. I do not understand what there's just something about putting her on TV that like the fans turn for whatever reason. It makes no sense to me. My fear is that if you bring Brandi out on Raw to do that next week, she's going to get nothing or booed on the entrance, and then she's going to get cheered when Brandi's going to get cheered when she gets punted. And then you're screwed.
I was thinking it was just going to be at Mania. It wasn't going to be on Raw or a go home, but you never know.
Well, now, she can make a surprise, but also is that night one or night two's main event? Is Orton?
Night one, I believe.
Night one. Okay. Do you want to run the risk of night one? Because if night one is real huge in the main event, that can also goose sales for night two. What if she shows up? What if Brandi shows up as a run in and does the thing and gets punted and all that kind of stuff, and it's just flat? No one gives a shit.
Yeah.
That's dangerous, right? At least if you do it on the week before in Raw, if it goes well, if Randy gets cheered for punting her, it's like, okay, she's at the local hospital and she's not going to show up at Mania, and now Cody's really going to fight. Or if it goes well, it's like, all right, she's going to come back and get her revenge at Mania. But I wouldn't just bring her out end of night one of 7 hours or whatever they book now.
So last night, Tony Schiavone's ready for the contract signing between Kenny Omega and MJF and Explosions and Judas. Chris Jericho is quote unquote home.
Yeah.
When I think 95% of people thought he was definitely going to be in WWE.
I think we all did. And when the Rumble came and went, and we were like, oh, interesting. I don't know. I mean, you say your thoughts first. I have a couple of thoughts on it for sure.
The rumor around the campfire is that WWE did offer him a retirement run with Gunther, and he didn't want that. He wanted to be regular guy on the roster, so he went back to AEW.
Also, there was some fear. There was a leak today. I assume it's a leak because Jericho's always very good about leaking his own stuff. That they wouldn't let him continue to do his own projects the way that he's like in that he's in that new Margaret Needs Money thing, and he's done other small stuff. I don't think it's the old days of Vince where you could only do WWE studio films. Like I think he would do it, but I'll take it at his word. It's like, yeah, they probably want you to just do, CAA stuff, right?
I'm going to guess it's more the former, though. They just wanted him for a retirement run and not full-time, and he still thinks he has gas in the tank. And I think he's miscast in AEW right now. I don't think
he has gas in the tank at all. Well, I'll say the first thing is I think it's 95% we all saw there. Also, there was some question about, good friend of yours, good friend of the show, Sean Ross Sapp, there was some question about whether it was added time and all that. I also think maybe, Jericho showing up means the clock restarts, right? And then he can always renegotiate again against that deal if he feels like against that WWE table deal that's will always be on the table. I don't think he has anything more on the gas in the tank. And here's why, because I've always referred to Chris Jericho, and I mean this as a huge compliment. I sincerely mean this as a compliment. I've always looked at Jericho as the Madonna of professional wrestling. He's always been able to reinvent himself. He's always been able to stay ahead of the game. He understands that, what repackaging Madonna, people like to joke that Madonna, couldn't sing and, they needed 18 tracks of vocals before, auto-tune existed, but she always worked with the best people. She knew what talent was. She signed, when she had her first record label, Maverick label, who did she sign? She signed Alanis Morissette. She signed, what's their names? Shove It, White Pony, all that kind of stuff. And then she signed Massive Attack. She has an excellent taste. Jericho comes out, nothing. It's not even one of the old ones like Painmaker or anything like that. It's just Jenny him White? In the jacket. But like, no, not Jenny White. It's Deftones. She signed to Deftones.
Oh, okay.
Last Morissette, Deftones, and Massive Attack is her first three signings. Oh, and the guys who did Firestarter. Project. Like she's smart. He doesn't have anything left of the tank because he didn't come in and do anything. He's wearing the old purple jacket. It's not even the spiky effy ripoff jacket, right? Like there was nothing there. He just come out to say Winnipeg, AEW, I'm home, and then bounces. I'm like, that looks like somebody that's restarting the clock on his contract, saying, well, I'm here now. If you want to just pay me to sit at home, I'm not taking time off. I'm available. And the clock just starts because there was just nothing to it. And then it was gone. It was a hometown pop. And I don't think, is he even from Winnipeg? He's not, right? Just Canada.
I thought he was from Winnipeg, but
I thought his dad played for the Winnipeg Jets, but I don't know if he was from that.
I think his dad played for the Islanders. As I
remember. Islanders, yeah. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. I don't know. It's not Saskatchewan for sure. So I don't know. I mean, the packaging wasn't there, and I was like, this is supposed to be a new album. It's a surprise drop on a Wednesday night of Madonna, and there's no packaging. There's nothing new. There's nothing there. It's not a new sound. She's not surprising. He didn't even show up with anybody.
Yeah, I thought it'd be funny if this was not necessarily an April Fool's joke, but a handshake deal, and then he shows up at Mania anyways, because they've been dropping hints in the Punk feud that he was coming back, which is hilarious to me.
Yes. Well, the same way that, you know, the same way that CM Punk did Summer of Punk in WWE after he did Summer of Punk and Ring of Honor, if Jericho had come out and did the same thing he did in WWE, where he just trolled the audience for the first 3 months and didn't say anything, that would at least been something.
Yeah. And I don't think, boy, this is a little bit like the Britt Baker situation. And I'd say that. Mm-hmm.
I don't want anything to do with that Britt Baker.
Well, no.
I'm just saying personally that Britt Baker thing seems super messy, and I just feel bad for everyone involved.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about when Britt was top of the division in the women's division.
Yes,
she thought herself a work rate person, that she could be the face of the division, and her reach kind of exceeded her grasp.
Yeah,
55-year-old Chris Jericho. Could do a match against Omega here and there, but the Fletchers, the Ospreys, the Okadas.
You don't think that, right? You don't think he turned down WWE's, you know, old man deal to get killed by Gunther because he thought he could still go. You don't think he still thinks he's like work rate champion, top of the card. I should have a title match with Fletcher. You don't think Jericho thinks that about himself, do you?
I wouldn't say I'm as good as I was, but I'm just half a step behind. That's what I think.
See, like, here's my brain, you know, because we love wrestling and that's why we do this stuff and talk about it, because we want it to be better. In my brain, I'm like, I could get behind a month to a 6 week long angle where he's saying that, where old man Jericho, veteran Jericho, is saying that to someone like Mike Speedball Bailey, and they're doing that back and forth. And so, like, at first couple matches, it works, you know, like best of seven or something like that. You know, like, he's starting to get over because, you know, he's more experienced. But then, man, as the matches get longer and I've started to like run out of tricks, you know, this Speedball guy is really taking it to me. Fletcher, that's, I'm not saying it's a squash match, but that's 8 minutes tops.
And
right?
I'm not saying I can't believe Jericho's.
Yeah, but I think Jericho can't think himself that way. No way.
I don't think he's coming back to be the mid-card, bring the young guys up and
I think he's coming back to do like some sort of mid-card, like maybe it's once more around the table with Don Callis. Maybe he pairs up with Darby Allin, because that's a fresh thing of like, you know, I've had my issues with Don Callis. You have your issues with Don Callis. You know, maybe we can make peace with this Jungle Boy guy. You know, he showed me something for 10 minutes that one time a couple of years ago, like the three of them against Don Callis for 6 weeks. Sure. But I think that's what he's doing. I can't imagine he's doing anything more than that. Higher in the card than that? No way.
Will Ospreay doing 20-minute bangers and then a neck angle. What do you think?
Boo. Hated it. Hated it all day. I do not like these things here for a couple reasons. I will give them the benefit of the doubt that they are doing this just for story, just for kayfabe. I understand where it comes from. This is not the first time it's done it. Obviously, Brian Danielson has done a lot of this kind of stuff as well. What I don't like about it is that it does not work. It doesn't work for storytelling, because if everyone, including the doctor at ringside, that again, you're showing me on screen, telling him that he doesn't have to go back in, it's a neck injury, and he goes back into the ring against doctor's orders. What you're telling me in the story, in kayfabe and narrative storytelling, that he is actually not good enough to wrestle right now. He still needs to stay away. And that's not what you're telling me. You told me he came out in full gear with the full intro and the pyro and all that stuff. He is fully healed. He has been cleared to wrestle. He's doing it. And then suddenly, no. You know, Will, it can't be. I'm like, that dog don't hunt. That's you either let me out of the hospital because I'm cured or I'm not. If you want to say that, like, if he came back and he was all bandaged up and in a neck brace and people, and he was fighting people to get in there and kick these guys' asses because he, like, it's just him stealing ambulances and driving away from the local medical facility, that's one thing. But don't do this big thing and then angle on his neck and just drop on his neck 90 times. Like you've always said, of like, hey, did you just come back from a huge injury? Here's your ladder match. Like,
well, that's a WWE thing, but this
frustrated me to no end because it's not good narrative storytelling. If this guy isn't clear to wrestle, or if everyone is just so worried about his neck and he doesn't have in the ring, he just doesn't have the strength to do it, where he's got to do a fancy roll up, but it's a sneak flash roll up is how he won that match, not with any of his stuff. Well, then he shouldn't be back and presented in the way that you like. He's cured. Either he is or he isn't. That's why you tape up the ribs. That's why you put guys in neck braces. That's why you put them. That's why you put them on gurneys and wheel them out. Either he is or he isn't. I hated it. I hated it so much. It's like, It's like my mom who worked in a hospital for 40 years, watching a medical show and people are just making up words. Can you hand me these forceps? Do you mean forceps? Do you mean forceps? That's how I felt watching it. It was so frustrating.
Yeah, it's like me watching, like, I'd watch, like, law firm shows. Like, mm-hmm. my parents fell in love with Suits in my dad's last days. And they're like, don't you want to watch this with us? I go, no. I worked in a law firm for years, and they don't talk like people in law firms. They talk like people who talk in television shows about law firms. This show sucks.
Real quick. So have you ever seen, or are you familiar with, there's a BBC satire show called The Royals about I've the royal family? Yeah. The woman, I love her to death. The woman that plays, what's her name? The American that buried Harry, the one we all talk about.
Meghan Markle.
The woman that plays Meghan Markle in the show is constantly referencing her time on Suits as if she was like, you know, like when she was doing the Royal Shakespeare Company. But it's part of me and my girlfriend's love language now, is because every time she does it, she says, you know, Jeff, it's like the time I was on Suits. She always says Suits. It's like she took acting lessons from Peter Fluey, and I just love it so much. What did you think of it? I hated it. I could not stand it.
It's one of these things where you have to make me believe, though.
And Hawk just looked like a million bucks. I wish they'd do more something interesting with him. Matches.
So you're telling me that Death Riders aren't going to break his neck. They're just going to let him go.
And Jeff, a couple questions real quick about that. Death Riders, yeah. So you said there's six of us and there's one of you. Did you have to take a second and think about who all the six were? Can you just name the six Death Riders like that off the top of your head?
I think I can.
We're behind the eight ball with the word think, right? So I'll give you Moxley. That's one. Who's the other five? Real quick.
Moxley, Garcia, Yuta, Claudio, Pac, and Marina.
Great. I forgot, of all people, I forgot Danny Garcia, which has been a real hassle for them, because I was thinking of, like, who's the six? Are they talking about, are they talking about that new guy that just came over from New Japan? Did he join the Death Riders? Second of all,
the reason you forget about Garcia is because he's doing a babyface angle against Tommaso Ciampa for the
which is bonkers. Reverse that. Switch out the two. It's the easiest thing in the world to have Tommaso Ciampa destroy him and the rest of the Death Riders come out and stomp a mud hole in Danny Garcia and go, finally, we got a guy I can ride with, who looks like, it's watching Garcia with the Death Riders is like watching, like he could chew ride with the guys from the Road Warrior. It doesn't like, wear your spikes, sir. Wear your spikes. Tommaso Ciampa, yeah, Ciampa looks like he belonged to those guys. Second thing that drove me crazy about that, too, is that John Moxley says it's not personal. That guy beat you up backstage. What do you mean? He jumped you. He did all this stuff. What do you mean it's not personal? Don't make this personal. Aren't you John Moxley? Don't you wish to, like, bleed at the drop of a hat? Don't you constantly say, I don't trust anybody that I don't bleed with, and that's why I beat the shit out of my own guys? What do you mean you walked away from not putting this guy out? And again, because they can't tell that story, they have to screw the ending with the Death Riders, who should just be like burying him, you know, underneath the concrete mat, on the mats in the concrete next to the ring. But they can't do that because the story you're telling is, oh, he's the neck isn't good yet. He shouldn't be back wrestling. That's
but
why
he's going to do 20-minute bangers with Pac doing all sorts of flips and stuff. But, you know, he really shouldn't be doing this. It's like,
as we say this all the time, man, that's how plot works. Plot is the things that have to happen in the beginning have to happen, so the things that have to happen at the end will make sense. And you told the beginning his neck is not good, and then I go, well, then why is he back doing his entrance, which, by the way, features a pretty big throw your head back with your neck move to reveal to take your Assassin's Creed Emerald City robe off. And then you do 20 minutes of a second act of flippy doos and car stunts and kung fu, and at the end you have the guy that will kill even his own people. The only people he doesn't kill are Renee Paquette and his daughter, and then you go, don't make it personal, I'm going to walk away now. And then on the same show that you have Cope beating guys up with chairs just because they're there, you know, doing concertos.
Christian almost made it personal.
And then finally,
I am just done with this. We have had 50 some odd years of professional wrestling on television, perhaps more.
In America, probably more.
I mean, it's gone back to the 50s.
Back to the 50s, yeah. We're pushing 75, 80 years.
We can't come up with another trope other than the contract signing.
Hate it. Hey, Kenny, I know that they booked things around that. Shirts can be taken on and off. So if you're going to sit at a table and sign a contract, wear a shirt and then maybe take off the shirt to wrestle. And just going to throw this out here, I'm not saying it has to be a nice shirt, right? But a shirt, because you're sitting across from a guy that is dressed to the nines. And then later on in the main event, when you're watching a guy long after you have wrestled, put a shirt back on when you're on commentary and talking. It's crazy. I'm looking at a guy famous for being associated with Japan sitting at a contract signing, and he looks like the common redneck that refuses to put on his t-shirt at the dinner table. It's insane to me. I want MJF to be the good guy now, because he's just like, yeah, look at you, man. Of course I don't want you to represent me in the company and be the champion. That's insane.
It's my running joke is that every time he comes out, he looks like he just got out of the shower. It's like he has shorts, flip-flops.
Yeah.
You know,
that's his baby face look. The suit look is when he's heel. And I know that's going to be the argument, like, oh, I don't want to put on a dress shirt because when people see me in a dress shirt or sunglasses, they recognize me as a heel. I'm like, yeah, but you can put on a polo shirt that says AEW on it, right? You can look like you're an EVP. You can come out in khakis and a belt, right? And then take that off. They cut to commercial before the match, right? So, like, picture in picture.
And again, I want an old 6'5", 300-pound hillbilly in backstage who's the enforcer, or Ming, or somebody.
Mm-hmm. Somebody.
Who says, okay, guys, when you go out and do promos and stuff like that, it's kayfabe only. It's kayfabe. It's whatever the world we've built here, and we're going to stay into it. Because I am done hearing about MJF's hair plugs. I am.
Yeah.
The brother decided he wanted to be more cosmetically pleasing. I'm not going to shame him for it.
If you wanted to break a kayfabe, all that, like, you could have just, like, or make it like, you know, the postmodern, the meta, all that. Have Kenny Omega come out in a polo shirt and khakis and you know, some nice sandals with them. Like, he's like, it would make sense to see both him and MJF at the same, like, convention center for a conference. Have him carrying his gym bag and being like, I know you because you're the champion, you get to call these things. I know that you made this contract signing right before I'm supposed to wrestle. So I have to come out here and change in front of everybody like a schmuck. You made me so I couldn't go home and go back to the locker room and get into my place where I have to be, where I have to put on my best because I'm the best bout machine. I have to do all this stuff. Yeah, I know you're doing this to embarrass me. I'm going to change at ringside. Wow. Thanks a lot, man. And he would have looked appropriately dressed for all the clips that they're going to put on social media for a contract signing. And then he would have looked appropriately dressed for the wrestling match. You know, when he goes to do his job, he's an EVP. They mention that all the time. Well, here's an EVP signing a contract like a professional. Do you go to Warner Brothers and sign that contract for the new 5-year deal on TBS with no shirt on, Kenny? You don't. It's insane to me. I hated it.
It's crazy. It's one of those things.
Everything else is just fine, but I'm like, I can't unsee it. I'm looking at you. Why do you not have a shirt on when you're sitting at a table? I actually thought a lot of the talking stuff was good. Like, and then, you know, it was nice to like, I thought it was even well done how like they got Speedball in there. It's like, hey man, there's two guys from Canada. I love the fact that MJF did his AAA evil gringo character, but in Canada. Yes. Okay. Great. Why do you hate the hair plug thing so well? It didn't bother me as much.
Well, Matt.
Fair. My bad. I think it's more of like, I don't mind the postmodern or the inside baseball stuff as much. Because I do think that MJF has gotten better over the years of sort of like peppering that in a little less than he used to.
I also think it also feels like a flex move in terms of like, I know that they probably smartened him up to do it, but it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, and that's why you're getting a divorce right now. And you're just like, dude, I don't want to know about your hair. I just want to know about the MJF character or whatever on here. Like,
I'm fine with that. I assume if I see it on TV, they wanted me to see it. I assume that they talked about it ahead of time. As you and I both know, our favorite wrestlers together are Magnum TA and Tully Blanchard. And Blanchard is the one who's like, hey, I'm going to say that I cut your brakes. And in the hospital, Magnum's going, that's going to be a great heat, brother. Do it. I have a huge complaint about this show. That's sort of a larger conceptual thing, but I want to make sure we get through all your stuff first.
No. I have nothing else because I was going to end it there, but if you have something, let's do it and let's
end on it. So Kenny has to go right into that match. And as I'm watching that match, to me, I'm not talking about skill set. I'm talking about I like every single person in that trios match. Also, I like a good trios match. We were talking about, you know, Southern Territories and Crockett. You know, one of my favorite matches of all time is Abdul the Butcher, the Barbarian, and old man superstar Billy Graham, bald-headed karate pants.
Yes.
Versus babyface Buzz Sawyer. Sam Houston taking, you know, babyface in peril to a heightened level, and, you know, the Raging Bull Manny Fernandez. I love those old kind of school. So I was in on this. I was like, yes, it makes sense that, you know.
Was that Buzz Sawyer or Buzz Tyler?
Buzz Sawyer, because okay. It's got,
Oh, that's right, because Sawyer and Slater were baby faces before the Midnights came in, and then they left.
Exactly, okay. And then you turn them. So I love that kind of stuff, and I was into it. I was like, yeah, and you know what? It makes sense that Kenny and Brody and Jack Perry would all be, you know, again, what I said at the beginning of this, baby faces used to be friends.
Yes.
Backstage, right? They used to stand up for each other. And I like the guys. I don't like the new name of the unit. The Gates of Agony, I was always fine with.
The Demand.
Barf. First of all, terrible SEO. But also, it's the easiest thing in the world to like just cut that off the legs. Like if I'm working backstage as a writer or as an agent or a producer. Not that I have the skills to do that. Please don't fill up Jeff's inbox with that. But I would say that my first thing would be like, well, I don't think you guys are in that much demand. Like if I can immediately cut you off at the knees with a promo, the shittiest promo in the world.
Too much supply, not enough demand. Enough demand. You just go economics. Yeah.
And then done. So here's my thing is I'm watching all six of these guys. The guy that is the most over, the guy that has the most thing where people want it. And I am from a background where you ride the hot hand, the whole thing. Like you've said before, you know, talk me into the building and heat, promos, hate and heat. I am furious because they did the same thing with Orange Cassidy a few years ago when he was Orange Cassidy was white hot. He is someone that you that was different, something he was unique. The wrestling only really is successful if it can get mainstream media to pay attention of it and tell stories about it outside of our little box. The fact that they had an opportunity to belt Brody King. Yeah, I said it. I'll stand ten toes business on this. The fact that they did not take a chance on him and belt him and see what would happen with the world championship when people like Last Week Tonight with John Oliver are doing long bits on it. Like when it's on the news every day, you get them into the building, you get people covering your promotion because they want to know where these F ice chants are coming from. And that's how you find out who this guy is. Here's a guy that looks like every biker from the walk from, you know, Sons of Anarchy meets The Walking Dead, but he's a teddy bear. His kids love him, all this different stuff. It's a unique thing. And as I'm watching this match, I'm like, and now when is that ever going to be a chance for him ever again? You had a chance to make money with a guy, try it. And you know, he's never going to have that opportunity again.
No, and it was mainstream pub, and mainstream pub looks down on wrestling. Any chance you get where they like you, and it doesn't even matter what side of the political aisle you are, you go with that and you do it. And it's like,
and then you're 20, and if you're 20 minute bangers, keep some of those people in the building. Or like the way like my girlfriend's one of her best friends came over to her house. This was like 8 or 9 years ago. And we were watching the Royal Rumble and she was being cool about it. I was like, it's my favorite thing. And I explained to her, she's like, oh yeah, and she's a creative person. She runs museums, she's got an art degree and she loves
it. Oh,
is this
Megan?
Yeah, Megan.
I like Megan.
Yeah, fantastic girl. It was her birthday 2 days ago. Happy birthday, Megan. She doesn't know any of these guys from Adam, right? And I'm like hoping that we're going to get to see like this guy. I hope this guy gets come back. Let me tell you, when Roman Reigns came out, she went, oh my. Right? I was like, yeah, there's our handsome, that's our handsome horse prince, because, you know, Game of Thrones and Khal Drogo and all that was still getting compared to him. You get someone like regular publications, mainstream media is doing these stories, you get them in and here. 20-minute bangers will get these people going, holy shit, man, I didn't know these guys could do... Now, who's this guy? And then other people going, oh, my. Like, John Morrison takes off his shirt, and people are still like, holy crap, that guy's body is insane. Men and women. You...
Me.
They didn't belt him. And right? Holy crap. How do you not belt that guy? And as I'm watching this match, I'm like, I don't think you're ever going to get a chance for this guy again. And then you did him dirty. You did them dirty. It's a small dirt.
I would agree.
You can shake out the shirt and the dirt's away. You don't have to put it in the washer, but it's dirt. And I felt so bad watching.
They got scared because it was so close to the pay-per-view and they didn't want to make the move. And yeah, I get that.
God forbid should controversy drive people who would normally not pay for a pay-per-view to find out what's going on with all of this.
Yeah.
You know how much money you could have made by a bunch of conservative right-wing talk show people paying for these pay-per-views just to hate watch it? Like, there's nothing wrong with that. Take their money. Money's green.
It is.
Money's not red. Money's not blue. Money's green. Take their money,
I think you got the wrong audience. It would have been that MAGA-coded audience, not the conservative audience. The MAGA-coded is like, oh, we need a Super Bowl counter-programming. It's like, why in the... you don't understand.
But they would still buy it because they have to clip it. They have to talk about it. They have to watch alongs on that. And you've got their money, and then they'll move on to something. But you might have like made some new fans. You might have extended this golden era of wrestling that we're in right now so that we don't get back to 2001 where it just falls off the cliff, right? Like, don't want that, man. It really bugged me watching that match where I'm just like, I like everybody in this. This is exactly the kind of trios match I love. The only thing that I didn't like about that show, I mean, I'm very excited that those three ladies had matching gear. I like matching gear, trios. I'm like, if you're starting to talk me into a female Crockett's cup, ooh, I'm Tony, make big biceps Tony, make it happen. I really like it. But no, frustrated. Very frustrated. That was my most frustrating part of the whole thing, was watching that guy not be the champion.
I'll end it on this. I'll let you get your plug in. But this just goes back to your favorite six-man match. I really like that match, too. I remember it now. But I always
Great American Bash, baby. Great American Bash.
On tour, yeah. I always liked that cobbled together team and then trying to find a reason why they would be a team.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes even you don't have to explain it, and it's still kind of interesting. Like I thought MVP would team with Matt Hardy all those years. I thought that was an interesting team, but
yes.
But this will end on this, because I love the Barbarian. The Barbarian is one of my favorite wrestlers, but people are like, oh, he can't work. What? I didn't need him to work. I just needed him to be big and do that boot thing and jump off the top rope with the headbutt. That's all I ever needed from him.
Yeah.
But he was the last U.S. tag champions before they got rid of those belts was the Barbarian and Dick Slater.
Oh, I bet that was great.
And I am always like, I always go, what would these, it wasn't that long, but I'm just like, what would they have to talk about on the road? And some guy who's on the Voices of Wrestling just goes, I bet they both loved fishing. And I go, there it is. That's what I need to see. I need a vignette of that now. I need to see them fishing. I need to see Dick Slater and the Barbarian in full paint. Although the Barbarian could be in like the lake, like not with a pole, but with a pole's funnier. Yeah.
Did you ever see Greg the Hammer Valentine in George Animal Steel's movie about them being fishermen?
No.
What? Oh, dude, go to YouTube. It's free. You can watch it there. Greg the Hammer Valentine and George the Animal Steel made a movie where they're just two old fishing buddies sitting around talking yarns. It's an independent shot on VHS camcorder. Feature of them just, it's so great. I will say, last thing to give credits to, I like the ladies match. I thought I think Tekla is a person that they belted, and they said they saw that the opportunity, the whole thing with like the brass knuckles and paying it off, and Ishii is, you're not gonna like that. I hope that leads, I mean it won't, you and I would love, and we know that this means it leads to a brass knuckles on a pole match at the pay-per-view, and that's why you do it. But her like stuffing it back, her, the way that she used it, you know, pinned and then hit it away from the ref. I was like, this woman has been watching the same wrestling I've been watching. And
she's always
you.
On character. She's always on character. She's my favorite promo, because she cuts these promos on Collision that are just amazing. Both
in
Paul
what,
and
her
I
second,
love
in
her.
Her second, her third language after third, German and Japanese. Yeah.
Yeah,
that whole thing is great. And I love how they have like everyone in those ladies matches had matching gear. And I was like, yeah, because you're on
those
a team.
Those little things are so good.
Just little things.
Where can people find you, sir, if they want to?
I feel like we should do a Rob thing and just cut it.
Okay, we'll cut it.
Hey, everybody. My name is Jesse Collins, and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic, and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns of individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.